Hello and welcome to In Conversation with Ashwin, and you are listening to your host Ashwin, who will give you a window into stories and insights into the most innovative and interesting people I know. They've written books, created movements, built thriving businesses, and have insanely interesting ideas. For more, check out our past episodes on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or any other platform you're listening on. Just search for In Conversation with Ashwin and hit enter and follow. Hello listeners, welcome to episode number 16 of the podcast. I've been missing in action. I've been busy with the MBA, but I found some time during the break to record an episode, to edit an episode. In fact, editing takes longer than recording it. I'm happy to have this one shipped out. Hope you guys enjoy it. My conversation is with Nimi. She's the founder of Blue Flag Project, which is an all-purpose sustainable men's shoe company. It's a very exciting product. I can't wait for you guys to start listening to this one. A little bit of background about Nimi. She graduated with an MBA from Harvard University, before which she worked as an associate in Goldman Sachs in hedge fund consulting. She also worked with American Express for 3.5 years in their payments product, and also as a product manager with Adaptly for about 4.5 years before she went solo with her entrepreneurial venture. In my chat with Nimi, we talk about her early childhood and how that has defined her choices. We speak about her experience at Harvard and how she shies away and why she shies away from using the Harvard tag. We speak about Blue Flag, the company she founded. We talk about her product, her story, how it started as a side project, and later she used Kickstarter to gather enough validation and go full throttle. And now she's fully invested into building this product and getting it out to market. We speak about product, competition, her team, influencer marketing, the retail industry, the different pain points. We discuss Facebook and Instagram as social media channels to sell, how they're incredibly powerful and targeted. We also talk about sustainable fashion, since Blue Flag prides itself on using 8 plastic bottles, and every plastic bottle takes about 450 years to disintegrate. So there's a huge value proposition here. Blue Flag is solving more than one problem at a time. And we'll be talking about how plastic is a hot commodity and is super expensive, which was really surprising for me to learn. I link a Washington Post article that we mention in our conversation in the show notes, so you can find that in case you want to give that a read, how an Israeli startup has almost capitalized on the patenting process of using plastic in cloth and textile. She also gives her 2 cents on how we cannot control the output, we can only control the input. So we end the conversation on a philosophical note, but I learned a lot through this conversation. Nimi is super inspiring. Her experiences in the corporate world and using that, leveraging that to kind of diversify to be an entrepreneur is very, very inspiring, to say the least. So please enjoy my wide-ranging conversation with Nimi, founder of Blue Flag Project. So Nimi, tell us a little about your early childhood and how that has ended up having an influence on the person that you've become and are becoming.
That's an interesting one. Let's see. Okay, so I was born in Minnesota. My parents are from India. And so it was very, not a lot of Indians in Minnesota. But what I would say is I definitely, it's interesting, my husband and I are both entrepreneurs. And I think, this is me being an entrepreneur on my own for the first time. I worked in startups, but I always say, the fact that my parents came to the U.S. from India, actually, if anything, I think it kind of led me to being a little bit more on the risk-averse side. Like, he's sort of the opposite, He grew up and his parents were like, yeah, whatever you want. You should do whatever you want. And mine were like, make sure, okay, you don't want to be a doctor, so then it needs to be an accountant or it needs to be the government. And I just kind of, the mindset, I would say, that I got from them, and obviously this changes as you grow older, was like, oh my gosh, you really have security and stability are number one, And so I started my career I worked at Goldman Sachs for 5 years. I went to business school, worked at Amex. And then, when we did our first business, which was Plated, that was the first time I actually went to the entrepreneurial space. And, it felt so nerve-wracking just because it was so not used to sort of like, oh, huge company and all the security there. But I think, you know, just finding my way through it slowly, over time. Startups are totally, you know, where I love to be. I love to be in things that are innovative, changing. And so, you know, this is finally years and years and years later, I kind of was able to shake that enough to give it a try myself. So that's now. But it took a long time.
Nice. You said you went to B school in between. Tell us a little about that. Why B school, and how was Harvard? What was the best thing about it?
You know, I kind of, sort of my whole career has been, so there's no like great industry or function theme. I've actually dabbled a lot. The thing that I knew is that I didn't like finance. I was there for 5 years, but by the end, I just was like, you know what, this is not the industry like I want to have my career in. And so for me, business school was a great way to just learn about business and what else is out there. And for me, that was just the way I felt I could get the best exposure to transition and like learn more. And it was, right? You meet people from all over the world, and you meet people from every kind of background, industry-wise, function-wise, and it's just like a crazy amount of exposure to different ways of thinking. You know, having been in finance, it's a very specific skill set, and also like learning about operations or, you know, whatever else it is, marketing. I just wanted that, and I wanted the platform that I thought would help me transition to something else.
Got it. And how was Harvard?
It was great. It was super fun.
Sorry to cut you off. The thing about Harvard students, I don't know, maybe you can bust this myth, is whenever they talk about where they studied, they it would take a while for them to say Harvard. They'd be like, oh, I did business school. And then I'm like, oh, where'd you go? And they'd be like, I went to Boston. And I'm like, okay, Boston's a city.
I say, I do it sometimes too. I learned to stop doing that because I'm like, why am I hiding this or whatever it is? I don't know. It's like, maybe it's something about the name. You feel like shy to say it. I don't know. I have the same thing. And now I've just learned to be like HBS or Harvard and,
Yeah.
I don't know. It's true. I think you're like right on.
And you know, I was actually using this conversation as another revalidator. I'm like, okay, I'm going to ask Nimi to talk about B school and school. And you never mentioned Harvard again in this conversation. I'm like, okay, this is a thing.
It's definitely a thing. It's definitely a thing. And if people ask me now, I'll say, oh, Harvard. But before I used to be like in Boston. So you're right on. I've heard also people say the same thing.
Sorry, go ahead. You were saying.
So no, great experience. Fantastic experience. Honestly, I wish if I could go back, I would take even more in, you know, like there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of social. There's a lot of meeting different folks, exposure to all kinds of things. You know, at the time, you know, but given how recruiting and stuff works, right, you kind of sort of need to hone in a little early or, you know, clubs or whatever it is to learn about certain industries. But I mean, the resources are just amazing. The network is amazing. It was a great experience.
Awesome. That's nice. Let's talk about your startup, Blue Flag. How did that happen? And like, I've seen the video, but if you could kind of give us more context around its inception.
Yeah, I mean, literally, it's the story is really about a year and a half ago, we were at a wedding. My husband is the inspiration. He is, I mean, I can't even tell you like the flip-flop youth.
Okay, so the person in the venture capitalist
meeting. And he, you know, he just loves to be comfortable. Like, it's not that he doesn't have formal shoes. He has a whole collection. Like, I've got him some, his dad has given him some. It's just like to get him to wear them is like a pulling teeth. Yeah. We were at a campground wedding and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't actually check to see if he packed his nice shoes. And you know, there is a dress code. It's happened before. Yeah. And by chance he did, for whatever reason, I guess he just like actually paid attention to the dress code for once. And you know, then all these guys at a campground wedding are like complaining about the shoes. And I'm thinking like, meanwhile, the girls are in heels. So it's like, sort of like, all right, whatever. But then it's just sort of like, isn't there something like, is that like literally, are they really that uncomfortable? And it just led me to look at the market. Cause I was like, why isn't there something like, there's nothing new in this market. There's nothing like sort of in between or that's comfortable. And I knew that there was like this Cole Haans that have like the Nike Air. I did know about that. But I was like, is that the expense of it? And so when I looked, I was like, wow, this is a very interesting market. Like, you really do have like flip-flops, tons of sneakers. I mean, the sneaker category has just become, it may as well be like an industry in its own at this point. But, and then it was like these formal shoes. And I, you know, there's some kind of, you know, things in the middle. There's boat shoes, there's some loafers. But, you know, honestly, it was also this idea of an aesthetic, which is where the sustainability piece came into. I'm not a retail person. You didn't hear any any fashion in that background. It's really just that, you know, I was learning about plastics and some of these materials, and it's something that I just care about. And I was like, wow, why can't they do something like that and make it have a really good look and do something different that's truly like an innovation in that market? And so it was honestly with a side project. We were tinkering around with it. We found a designer. Then he connected with someone who could find samples. And it wasn't going anywhere. It was sort of just a side thing. My husband was wearing them, and people always would ask about them. Like, oh, what are those? Like, hey, you know, like, just curious. Like, what is that shoe? And then, honestly, I was just doing some consulting projects, and I just wasn't really motivated by any of the projects I was working on.
Yeah.
And when I ended the last one, I said, you know what? I think it's just that time. I think all of these things where people are like, I think you just need to try something on your own. It just kind of clicked. So
wow.
There we have it.
That's awesome. And this was 1.5 years ago?
Yeah, that when I actually actively started working on them.
Yeah.
In terms of taking it on as a full-time project, not just doing it as like a project.
Yeah.
Was in the summer. I decided to do it in the summer. I was like, you know what? Here, I have this box of samples sitting there. I'm like, thinking about why are these consulting projects not inspiring me? They're so one-dimensional. It's like either help me with digital marketing or specifically product. And I'm just like a person who loves thinking across the board. And, you know, whenever you tell that to people, they're like, well, maybe you should do your own thing. And I was like, you know, these are never going to go anywhere if we don't actually dedicate full time to it.
Yeah.
And so the idea there was like, let's just give it a swing. And the reason that we did a Kickstarter was just like, hey, let me just see. Let's just see. Like, we think it's interesting. We think it's cool to other people, like, at what price and all. Let's see if we can just gather info in a lightweight way to just validate it or not. And so that's sort of, you're seeing sort of the first step in that process.
Yeah, it's quite the early stages, because I saw the funding goal as well. Like, you kind of doubled it because people have pledged more than you asked for, right?
Yeah, so we doubled that. I mean, that's pretty to do, you know, in Kickstarter, you have a lot of that. Most projects don't make it, right? Like, I think the stats are like very much not in your favor to even hit your goal.
Yeah.
But then those that make it, they can go off wildfire. I mean, you have sometimes people who are 500%, 600%, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no, it's very cool. I'm very happy that we doubled it. It's specific shoes specifically, which isn't like really their main category.
Yeah.
And then it's also, you know, I knew this is the lowest time on Kickstarter. I'm like, I'm ending this before retail season begins. And people were like, are you sure you want to do this now? Why don't you wait? It will be so much bigger. And I was like, listen, this is for data. This is for data. I'm not like trying to raise my funds this way. I just want to see, like, are we onto something? So I don't want to keep waiting until March, you know?
Got it. Just to go into the marketing specifics, who do you think your customers will be? Like, I did see that it's only a men's shoe, and is there a reason behind it being only, you starting off with just the men's segment?
This is just like, so the last 4 years I did product management, which is funny because it's a very digital job, and it has, again, the retail industry has its own little legs, but really, like, this is a startup. I'm very, like, leanly trying to leg into this. I don't want to have a million SKUs, men's, women's. Like, every piece of that component that you do is adding cost and risk to that equation before you even know anything about the market. And so for me, the use case that I had come up with was men. We've gotten tons of questions from women. They're like, what? This use case applies to us too. And I'm like, that's great. There's future potential for other things.
Yeah.
Let me try to nail one first. And then if I can nail that, absolutely, how amazing, you know, to expand. So that's really the logic.
Got it. And what do you think?
But could it be another men's shoe or a different men's shoe? Could it be socks? Like, we don't know. But yeah, I think there's a lot of potential there.
Got it. And then what's the competition looking like? Is there anybody in the market who's doing something similar?
You know, there's one company that's doing digitally knit. It's not plastics, but I came across them recently. And I would say just aesthetically, it's the closest I've seen. It's still pretty different. But aesthetically, I'm like, oh, it's actually somewhat similar. Because usually if you look at our shoe, there's really like, from what I've seen, at least, and, you know, I survey the market pretty frequently.
Yeah.
There just isn't this concept. It's an aesthetic. It's as well as a material set, you know, and so I haven't, but, you know, I think this is definitely a trend, right? Like the knit is a trend right now. The ocean plastics, you know, and just generally like this whole fast fashion thing is a trend. I wouldn't doubt that this we will see stuff like this, but right now, at least on the men's market now.
Got it. And what when a little about Blue Flag's team, like is it you and your husband with a couple of designers or is the team bigger than that?
My husband's not actually on the team. He was sort of just like, he's sort of the wearer. He's the main.
He's like the model, the customer, the idea generator, and the motivation.
He's QA. You know what I mean? Like, because you know, it took a few times. Like, we got these the first time. They're sort of, all of a sudden the bottom started separating from the top. You know, so he literally, I'm like, wear these. We need to know how they wear.
Yeah.
But that's him. He actually runs his own business. He's in his own startup at the moment, so he doesn't really have the capacity to be on the team, but obviously, you know, we talk and we brainstorm. I have Mona, who's just sort of, and Lydia, they were the main ones who were sort of helping me from a marketing perspective, social, email, all of those, you know, components, the digital stuff, as well as just like operations, figuring out like, who do we use for shipping? Who do we use for, you know, pick and pack and all that stuff? So two people so far, and then I'm, you know, as we go to the next step here, we'll look at expanding from there.
Got it. And if you had to say from a scale of 0 to 100, how much of what completion stage are you at before you actually start having this maybe on Amazon? How long till I till?
Ooh, Amazon. Interesting. I had not considered Amazon as a preliminary channel, but if we're just talking preliminary channel, so in my head, if we're talking about just like actually like maybe more like e-commerce or like launching it outside of the crowdfunding world.
Yeah.
What I would say is right now I'm going to look at raising money because sort of I was able to do this all, you know, we paid ourselves back with the Kickstarter. It's great. But then it's sort of like, okay, do we want to take this, expand this really to launch a brand? And this is just the way I'm looking at it. There's a few ways you could go about it. You're right. Probably put on Amazon, probably wouldn't even, I don't really need to launch. There's a lot of like discovery there, but I really want to make a brand out of this. And so the way I'm thinking about it is a direct to consumer mixed with some in-person sales. Like one of the things that we learned is like very difficult to do shoes purely online. I mean, that's a variety of factors. One, customer acquisition costs have just become crazy. I worked in social media for 4 years before this.
Yeah.
And I've watched that trend. So if you're only going to be acquiring on social and on digital, you're going to pay a lot of money. It's actually worth your while to give some of that same money up to a wholesaler and like get people to actually be like, oh, okay, this is what it looks like. It's very different in person than what it looks online. Any person who ever interacted with in person is like, wow, this is even nicer than what I thought. And this feels even better than what I would have guessed. And so we know that there's influencers, there's all this stuff. So to build a brand is what we want to do. And so what we're thinking of doing is starting with boutique sales, just because again, like huge wholesalers, we're not quite ready for that step yet. I think that's just like that's a huge thing. We got to get a lot of other things in place. So a mixture of direct to consumer as well as some strategic boutique sales, as well as maybe pop-ups and then going that way.
Got it. If I could just go back to
your timeline for that is probably March, April, I would say.
Okay. Nice.
You know, I mean, to be honest, there's a part of me that's like, you know, oh my God, what have we gotten ourselves into? I mean, like, is this, you're talking to someone who's not retail, much less footwear, which is a very specific thing in retail. And I was like, I'm so excited about this project. Should I just like call it? Should I fulfill these orders or should we let it go before I get into this crazy world?
Yeah.
But obviously I'm feeling a little excited about it, so I don't really want to do that. So
No, that's amazing that you mentioned influencer marketing, because it's so big today. Like the power of social media is literally unparalleled. I know a couple of startups in India, actually. This friend of mine used to make cupcakes, and I told her she should really go online and just see how it works. And a lot of people started tagging her, and you won't believe it, in 20 days, she grew her revenues by 800%. And it's nothing. Wow. It's just people tagging her, people saying her cupcakes are great. And she hired a team to kind of work on it. And now she's like opened a store in a couple of places in the city. And she never thought of this. Like, she had no marketing knowledge. She had no business partner. Yeah. All she did was give her cupcakes to her friends who started tagging her on Instagram. And people started saying, oh, can I order? And boom, it just went out of proportion.
Well, and the reason is, and this is just from my own, you know, one, the rise of influencers is just huge, but two, like, once upon a time, these social media channels offered you organic distribution, right? But like, their paid advertising model is completely, you know, how they run a business. And so now it's either you're paying or you post on organic because you need everyone needs their story and people want to visit their page and see what's going on. But the reach is like almost nothing compared to when you pay. But you get some of these folks who just like actually have a following, and you know, that's sort of like their own little media outlets. It's almost like having PR, you know what I mean? And it's, you know, either it's because you're giving them product or whatever it is, like it's a lot more cost effective than trying to just do paid. Yeah. So yeah, I 100% we have to think through like, hey, who would be these influencers?
And
try to go that route as well.
Got it. Just to follow up on the whole social media, you said paid campaigns. Do you think they're effective? Like, how effective are they? Because there's a lot of bot accounts. There's a lot of fake likes. There's a lot of fake things that kind of mar the branding if you actually end up doing that, as opposed to the organic word of mouth spread. I'm wondering where that distinction is. Where do you think your money is actually worth when you pay for advertisement versus not paying for it?
So I think, like, again, what's the goal with advertising? I mean, Facebook and Instagram, even Twitter, like, they're incredibly powerful platforms.
Okay.
And when you pay for their distribution,
yeah,
you have the ability to reach highly targeted audiences in a way that honestly really, I mean, obviously Google has great capabilities as well too, but that kind of targeting and that kind of reach, at this point, from a digital perspective, it's like almost unparalleled. Yes, there are fake things, like, and that's more like people buying likes, right? So that's not like, if you're going to pay Facebook to put out a campaign, they're not buying likes for you. You know what I mean? Like, that's not how they work.
Yeah.
What ends up happening is that's what some brands are doing to make it look like, you know, that they're bigger than they are.
Yeah.
But the paid is really just impressions. And so some people, it's like, hey, I just want people to get, am I looking for people to understand what my brand is? Just from a reach perspective, the same as you put it in a magazine, a lot of people see this magazine, now they're starting to be familiar with my brand, all the way to like click to buy this thing. And so I actually think it's incredibly effective. And that's just been my own experience through several brands and working in that industry a little bit. I just think that the cost have become very prohibitive, and you have some of the issues that you're talking about.
Yeah.
But it is, I still think it's a great channel. I just don't think it can be the only one.
Got it. And the last bit about Blue Flag I'd love to touch upon, actually one of the most important things, is the social angle to it. The fact that you use 8 plastic water bottles to create one shoe. How do you do that?
Yeah. So that is actually, like, it's interesting. There's an entire industry, and as I've been digging deeper and deeper into it, I think there's so much there. There is so much business potential in just purely like what is happening and what needs to happen, not just in fashion, just like in physical goods production, shipment, you name it. And so there's innovations happening. I actually think the innovation's slower, given these huge companies have these mandates to be like carbon neutral, all this stuff. Like, people don't realize like how much waste is going into the system, and that waste isn't getting out of the system, right? So I think, like, if our beaches maybe looked like some of the beaches in other parts of the world, this would be more in our face. The externalities of how we're producing right now, people just don't, I think they read it, but they don't quite grasp what's happening. And I think that can only last for so long. This is just an innovation, that one of the innovations, I think many will come, which is literally, plastic is recycled or is sent off. From there are now suppliers who are purchasing that plastic water bottles. And they are taking it's literally shred, It's a process. They shred it, they melt it, they pass it through like almost like, I want to say, like a spaghetti strainer kind of thing, where they make literally a fiber that's made into to yarn, and then that is what's used to knit the upper of the shoe. It's also being used in denim. It's being used, you name it. Like, this is it's actually a very hot commodity right now because it's pretty expensive, because a lot of people want it and not that many people are doing it. But yeah, that's how it's done for us. We are taking the plastic is literally just a component, and it's bought like any other material. Like, if you were to buy cotton or wool, you can buy it. It's just that it's in pretty limited supply.
You're kidding. This is in limited supply? Plastic is in limited supply?
It's absolutely ludicrous. If you want to hear my idea for like a great company, and actually there was just a Washington Post article on this, there is a company in Israel who figured out a way. I don't want to misspeak exactly. I know it's plastic, but they might even actually be able to use some blended materials, not just plastic.
Yeah.
And they've created an entire factory and process that they patented to take trash, because we have a huge crisis. Like, right now, when people are recycling in the U.S., it's actually going into the landfill. China told us, like, we're not taking your recycling anymore, because the truth is they were just dumping it in the oceans, and there was just, like, a limited ability to actually process it because of the volume, and obviously there's tons of, I'm sure, other reasons given that. So now people are sorting their recycling in the U.S., and it's going right into, like in Los Angeles, it's going right into the landfill. So you're sitting on this thing that people want to use just because sustainability has become in fashion. People are waking up to it. But I think the innovation in sort of, on the materials side and where those are being produced and what we can do, it's kind of lagging a little bit. So yeah, this is in high demand. It's expensive. It actually ends up making my cost of good more expensive, you know, than it would be. It would be cheaper if I used fresh plastic, which is absurd, but that's the case.
Yeah. No, that's interesting you say that, because I'm wondering if plastic actually makes the product better, like the plastic that you're using actually makes the quality better, or is it because sustainability is the new fashion, so using that as a message to position, and also the fact that you're serving a social need is the reason that the cost is, people are willing to pay for it. What is the reason? Is it the quality?
I think
or
it's twofold. One, it's the materials, but the other thing is, we actually designed this, right? There was the idea of like, hey, let's use upcycled plastic. The more you learn about that, that's great. You know, you have this plastic that's like, at a minimum, going to take 450 years to disintegrate. So you got to do something with it, because otherwise, like sitting in the ocean, sitting in the landfill. So it's nice. But the true solution really is like, we have to move to different materials. Like, let's work with what we have. But there's also just something to be said for better, more durable products. And so obviously plastic is an extremely durable, a durable material, but, you know, we don't want fast fashion, like throwing things away every year. You know, the fact that you can wash these, the fact that it was versatile was the idea of like, you don't need as many shoes. You can wash these and you can use them for different use cases. That was a lot of what the design that went into the thinking of this was.
Yeah.
But you know, if we keep expanding, eventually we'll look at other materials that are actually going to, like, you could throw them away and they actually would disintegrate. I think all of the industry has to go that way. Like, the plastic production just has to come down, but this one has a few different aspects to it.
Got it. And what's the average life of a Blue Flag shoe?
You know what? We're at about a year and some now with one of the pairs and still going. You can wash them.
Yeah.
They're pretty durable. They don't, you know, we kind of prototyped a few times, but it's a pretty durable shoe, just again, given the material. So we're hoping, you know, we haven't seen one longer than a year, but they're certainly lasting and still looking good. So
nice. And what are the things you consider when you price the product, like apart from just the cost of the material that goes in, and how do you think about pricing? We don't have to share numbers if you're not comfortable with that, but what are the things that you consider when you actually think about pricing the product before taking it to the market?
Yeah, you know, and that's where this is where business school comes in, and luckily you meet people from the retail industry who can educate you about this. And, you know, these industries have typical margins that they go for, and you have to talk to people about, like, why is that? That seems like a crazy high margin. And then you realize, oh, building a brand costs a certain amount of money. Oh, if wholesalers come into the equation, they take 50% of your cost. Oh, there's returns. Oh, there's shipping. You know, all of these are inputs into how much you need to actually price into your business. And so in the end, when you build a model out and you look, like, let's just say mine right now is a 3-year one, you want to be breaking even at some point. And so it's either it's going to be volume or it's going to be price. Hopefully it's a mix of the two, where you can create one, you know, a sustainability engine that you can keep developing products and going forward. So those are really the inputs. It's kind of like any other business. It's just that the margins here have a lot baked into them, right? So you have other components because it's a physical good that you have to think about, and just the way that distribution works is a little different. So those are really, those are the inputs. But cost, yeah, obviously cost of goods being a big one.
Got it. Last question about Blue Flag before I check. If you have more time, I can ask you a couple of personal questions or we can end the conversation. About channels, what are you looking at in terms of selling? I know you did mention briefly, but it would be good to kind of expand on how are you looking at Blue Flag reaching the customer? Where can I get it if I'm a customer?
Yeah, I think one, on our website, whenever we actually launch e-commerce, which should be in the spring. And then two, we're going to look in a very targeted way at boutiques, at places where we think sort of our end customer would be. So probably more high-end boutiques in certain places where, you know, working professionals, that kind of, you know, our demographic skews towards sort of 25 to 45, mid to high income travelers. We know that's one thing that's become very clear. People, for whatever reason, that shoot for travel, it really hits a sweet spot. And so we know that people who travel a lot like this. That's one of our interest groups that's ranked the highest. But also, you know, adventure and people who, you know, care about the earth. And so those kinds of things will inform the types of boutiques, but it won't be, you know, some huge retailer at the get-go.
Got it. And you're not thinking about Amazon or any other conventional forms of e-commerce?
Not right now. And again, that's just because we kind of need to leg into, you know, right out of the gates. I feel like that's just something we want to move into over time. But the brand building, the presence first, and then maybe, you know, looking at those other channels.
Got it. And it's only California that you're starting off with, or West U.S. or across the U.S.?
We will ship to the whole U.S.
Okay.
And then figure it out. Like, some of this is just a function of shipping, to be honest.
Yeah.
Which is, by the way, when we talk about costs, I think that people have no idea until they get into a physical product business, because so many things are free shipping 2 days on Amazon. It's an incredibly hard standard for a new business to meet. But, you know, it's just a shipping is a huge cost. Like, it's a huge per unit cost. And now customers have kind of come to expect it. So, you know, if we can go beyond the U.S., maybe Canada, for instance, that would be great, but that will just be a factor of that. But for sure, the continental U.S. from a e-commerce perspective, and then probably boutiques will start with the West Coast and then move from there.
If you could put one thing on a massive billboard for the world to see, what would it be? Jim Rohn says you're the average of 5 people you spend most time with. Famous athletes.
I love that one.
The world does not owe you a thing. What's your one line?
Oh man, that's a good one. You're stumping me with these like non-typical ones. I want to be my thing. It would be something along the lines of, you know, whatever it is that you're setting out to do, you do with 100%, but a little bit of detachment from the outcome is the key to life. You know, like, you control the inputs, you do not control the outputs. And I think if people just could separate that a little bit, we'd have a lot of happier society, you know? That's me. I'm like, listen, I'm gonna do everything I can to make this work and to do what I think. And that's just like, by the way, not business, that's everything, right? But the truth is, like, a lot of things happen in life, and it's just like you just gotta go with it, you know. So I think it'd be something along those lines. But I'll definitely think on it. I may come up with something else later.